Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. The New York Post not long ago polled members of the millennial generation, people born between 1982 and 2002, and asked them whether they'd seen movies widely considered to be classics. The results to some movie buffs were discouraging.
The poll found that less than a quarter of the millennials had watched an entire film that was made in the 1940s or 1950s, and only a third had seen one from the 1960s. And fewer than 30% had seen a black and white film. And that means no Casablanca, no Citizen Kane, or Bringing Up Baby.
Not even Goldfinger. Well, Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski falls into that age bracket, but she has seen plenty of classic films. She sat down with fellow film aficionado Ross Bigley to talk about the implications of the poll.
Well, when I first read the article, I felt it was pretty accurate. I know a fair number of millennials myself, and if I'm talking with someone else and they're around or we're discussing certain things and a movie comes up, I haven't seen it. Or there's a few millennials that I know particularly who would say, oh, I'm not interested in seeing it. It's old or it's in black and white. And I sadly think that's probably an accurate depiction in that article.
Yeah, the phrase it's old and therefore it's null or,
yeah.
You know, why do you think that is? Is it because it seems like a new movie released almost every week here and each one blockbuster action thing is filled with more and more, you know, CGI or effects that when it comes to viewing, quote, old-fashioned movies that are built purely upon the script and the actors that carry them, is that sense of appreciating that lost?
That could be. In my own personal opinion, I think the content that Hollywood produces now is not up to par with previous decades where you see, I think the 70s is the last really golden age of filmmaking here. The 90s had a lot of great spots in it, but you would go in the 70s and there'd be year after year and there'd be so many great films that came out. Nowadays, we are in an age where everything that people want to concentrate has to be new. Or we're talking about this now, that's past. I grew up in the 70s. I'm not going to knock this generation or how this society is now, but I always felt it was a little bit more literate society. You actually saw authors on TV discussing novels or world leaders discussing things, not saying one side against the other. There was actual discussions going on. You only had maybe three or four channels on your TV back then. I think a lot of people younger people probably can't comprehend that in this day and age, but you go home, you had the three major networks and PBS. And when a movie came on the TV at that time, because there was no video, there was no Netflix, there wasn't a Redbox, that was a big deal. Where, oh, that's on TV, let's get together as a family and watch it. PBS used to run older films quite frequently on the weekends or Friday nights. So I think that accessibility is no longer with us anymore. And I think most people are, while the technology is great with the internet, I think people are starting to be more in their bubbles where algorithms say, well, you like this, here's more like that. And people don't really venture out of their bubbles anymore to experience or find out what else is out there.
Now, before we get into the types of movies that we think make this quintessential period of movie time great, for you, what is the time frame of classic movies?
I would probably have to lump the 70s in there because most people really do consider that the last great age of Hollywood filmmaking where there was so many great films that came out in there. So maybe you would go from the 30s to the 70s. And I don't want to knock the 20s, but there's some great innovation there, too, because any leap forward really happened in the 20s with D.W. Griffith's storytelling techniques and the different types of optical things they were trying, which enhanced storytelling further, in my opinion. Anything older than 20 years probably could be considered a classic. It has enough time to have people reflect upon it and evaluated or reevaluated as well.
So for you, what makes a classic movie? I suppose not just for this time frame, but even if the standards of today's movie should be met, what makes it memorable? What makes it stand the test of time?
I think it's due to just the time it came out and released and how people became attracted to it, or something grabs an audience. I'm not a fan of the Fast and Furious films, but obviously that has a connection with an audience. I don't want to say that all classic films should be highbrow and art. There are some great lowbrow stuff too, which can be considered a classic in the way the director handles the material and media.
Do you think actors also have a role to play in that? I mean, because they come and go. Some stand out as, you know, truly great actors of their time, quote unquote. But when I go back and watch a movie with Cary Grant or Audrey Hepburn, it's just like there's still not much comparison to other people, you know?
I agree there. I mean, I recently watched His Girl Friday. You know, I haven't watched it in maybe 4 or 5 years. And even though they're dressed in 40s clothing, and they got the phones with the second receiver on there, and they got old-fashioned cars, the writing in there and the acting and the chemistry, people can enjoy it today. Cary Grant is brilliant in it, and so is Rosalind Russell. It's probably a film that was ahead of its time when it came out because of the overlapping dialogue, the quick, fast-pacedness of it. And that probably played into how people feel that comedy should be played nowadays.
With millennials watching these films, I mean, maybe they're in college and take a film class and are exposed to some of these classic movies. But what do you think is the main obstacle? You mentioned that we have content overload and the availability of these movies being played on the regular is not as much as it was back when PBS was airing it. Or if someone doesn't have Turner Classic Movies on their TV, you know, they're probably not going to be exposed to this type of thing. So, yeah, is it just in a completely different lane and people are zooming by?
I think so. I think it's accessibility, for one thing. A lot of people have cable still, but a lot of people cut the cord. And that was a great outlet for classic movies. When I was younger, AMC actually played classic movies. When I was in college, I actually went to, there was this great video store here in Milwaukee called Video Visions. And they had probably the best selection of films ever, more vast than a library. And if I wanted to watch like a Godard film, they had most of the Godard films on VHS. And that was my film education at the time. And outlets like those, video stores, are really no longer around. So a lot of kids I know turn to Netflix. And Netflix really doesn't program much beyond 1990. Nothing to the extent of what you would find in a video store or on Turner Classic Movies.
Right. And with Netflix, a lot of your time is spent on picking something to watch, because that's overload too. And I was on it the other night, and I saw a new category pop up that said movies from the 1990s. And I'm like, oh, my God, have we reached that point already? You know, that it's categorizing these movies already in that time frame, you know, as something separate and distinct, or, you know, quote, old.
I think people don't realize with Netflix, they're a licensing service more so than anything. There's also a reason why they carry the certain films that they do, because studios will say, here's this. You know, this is what you're getting with this package. With the downturn in DVD and Blu-ray sales, studios aren't really releasing their big film, classic films, or library in abundant numbers as they used to. And so those films are going out of print. There's some small boutique retailers like Kino, of course, Criterion, that will release this stuff, but they don't do it in large numbers. And you don't generally see this stuff in a store either.
Right. So let's talk about some of these films. And for our listeners, you and I did compile a list of 10 classic films spanning from, you know, the 1940s into the 1960s. And we invite all our listeners to go online and fill out the survey, just because we're curious how many of you have actually seen these movies. But with some of these films, which ones do you see as the quintessential standard? So, for example, One of my favorites is Roman Holiday. It's the first film that introduced Audrey Hepburn and kind of launched her career, and she was acting alongside an already standing legend, Gregory Peck.
Yeah, yeah. I like Roman Holiday a lot. That's William Wyler, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. It's a charming film. That's a star turn by an actress. Gregory Peck is no slouch, but it really catapulted her. You know, I think right after that she did Sabrina, or was it a year after? Or
just about a year after, yeah. Sabrina, yeah.
Which, in those days, Hollywood used to package films and thought, well, she was good like this, let's make more films like that. Mm-hmm. And that really helped cement her as, like, she was like the Julie Roberts of the day.
Yeah.
Or Meg Ryan or whoever is. There's no romantic comedies anymore, are there?
Yeah, not to the standard of, you know, William Wyler-esque romantic comedy. You know, she was the darling, so to speak, the Hollywood sweetheart. And
yeah,
I think she keeps that platform on her own. You know, I don't know if anyone can really compare.
Well, I don't think I'm trying to recall, but I don't think there was a romantic comedy release so far this year. Has there been, or last year? It's a formula. It's a formula that Hollywood kind of forgot to make.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to make a good one anymore, and then when the bad ones or mediocre ones come out, people generally don't see them, so they just say, let's not make a few for a while.
Right.
Westerns were like that. Now that Westerns are coming back.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about yourself? Which ones do you suggest for people?
Well, anyone with a general interest in film should always see Citizen Kane or Casablanca right off the bat. Citizen Kane is considered arguably probably one of the greatest films ever made. I'm a huge Welles fan. And the innovation in Citizen Kane is just remarkable because he saw things differently than how the Hollywood system was. And you saw ceilings in the shot probably for the first time with that film. You didn't see a ceiling in the shot because that's where he had the lights.
Exactly. It's a big soundstage.
The overlapping dialogue again. He probably started it before his Go Friday. That was a couple years before. It's really a remarkable film in the terms of what he achieved at that age.
And with Casablanca, you know, we'll always have Paris or the often misquoted people who say, you know, play it again, Sam, which actually is not in the movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman.
Yeah, Humphrey Bogart's one of my favorite actors. I love everything he's done. Even the weird horror film he did in the 30s, which he was contracted to play.
Another great actor who holds his own right is Peter O'Toole. And one of the films we picked is Lawrence of Arabia. And I think that's really the first example of a really sweeping worldwide production. You know, the shots on location in the deserts, the action. It's a war film, but just went beyond a lot of the films at the time. And even though there maybe were some other films that were long enough that they needed an intermission or, you know, two VHS tapes or something like that, I think Peter O'Toole's performance in this just really set it apart.
Oh, yeah. It came in a time when Hollywood was combating television a little bit, and the widescreen format was really utilized in that. And the images composed for a widescreen format are just incredible. Even the editing choices were always commented upon, where he blows the match out and boom, you're in the desert. The transitions that way. Anyone going to film school should watch that. Anyone wanting to be an editor should probably watch that too. It's a remarkable film. And back in those days, you would have these big epic films around 3 hours or so. And they had the curtain at the beginning, and he had an intermission. And they were long productions, and he made them seem special to help kind of combat television a little bit, too. In the sense, because television, anyone can sit at home. But it made it feel like an event going to those films.
And which other film would you recommend before we go on to some of the other questions?
Well, I love Double Identity.
So for those who are unfamiliar, what is that movie about, and who does it star with that?
Oddly enough, probably a person you would not associate in this day and age with hard-boiled film noir is Fred McMurray. Fred McMurray was a romantic comedian at the time. Did you know, he wasn't really, a lot of his romantic comedies don't really stand out today. And then he segued into being a Disney contract player, doing The Absent-Minded Professor, Son of Flubber, Follow Me Boys, and then got a regular gig on TV as a father of my three sons. He only spent like a month on the set while they shot around him because he liked to do the Disney films in between. That was his bread and butter. But so Billy Wilder saw something in Fred McMurray, and he's the only director that saw this kind of like darker side to him. He plays an insurance agent, and it's a classic film noir story where he gets involved with a femme fatale, Barbara Stanwyck, and they plot a murder of her husband. And they use insurance as a way to kind of like get a payday out of it or whatever. And double indemnity is a term that is specific to an insurance clause. Edward G. Robinson's great, and I think that was his first turn as a character actor. He was doing leads before then, and he kind of didn't know if he wanted to do the film because he always saw himself as a star, but then it helped him extend his career probably longer than that. And Billy Wilder used Fred McMurray again as kind of a ruthless person in The Apartment, one of my favorite Billy Wilder films, as a philandering boss who maybe psychologically tortures a young Shirley MacLaine in there.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we encourage our listeners to check out the other movies on the list of 10 we have, because we thought it was a kind of a good introduction of the scope of various classic films, from comedy to noir to epics. But what do millennials, or, you know, anyone for that matter, have to gain through watching classic movies if they haven't already?
Well, I think our culture is our arts. Nowadays, our pop culture is our culture. The geek pop culture has taken over America. And, you know, that's why we have an abundance of superhero films on TV, too, and festivals and conventions. So our pop culture is now the geek culture. But culture, in a sense, this is what, you know, brings people together. You can learn so much from watching a classic film and just how they were made. You're going to see great performances by actors you may never be familiar with. Like, imagine finding a book by an author that you just happened to discover and then find out that maybe he has 30 more books and you can enjoy those 30 books. These young kids, imagine when they discover Humphrey Bogart, you know, and realize, oh, wow, this guy's been in those other films, and you're finding something else to enjoy, too. Or, you know, Gregory Peck, Audrey Hepburn, you know. They're not going to be disappointed going in that area.
Well, Ross, thanks for taking the time to speak about it today.
Well, thank you.
Ross Bigley is a Wisconsin filmmaker and the organizer of the Milwaukee Short Film Festival. He spoke with Audrey Nowakowski, and you can take the poll about classic films they talked about at WUWM.com.